There are certainly certain stories in the Old Testament that if you wanted to talk about them, that you'd just love to just kind of skip right on past them and move on to the next story. And today's story that we're going to look at, and we're going to try to come to some answers, is probably one of the stories that would be more comfortable just bypassing and move on to the next chapter. Aaron had two sons. And what were their names? That's right. N and A. That's the best way to remember these two boys. N and A. And they were priests. And the nice thing about it, they were the third and fourth most powerful people with the children of Israel. And they were dedicated priests. These two boys were among the 70 elders that went up in the mountain. They were among the 70 that had seen part of God's glory, even though He shielded a lot of it. And they went through a 7-day cleansing for the sanctuary services, and they were very aware of how sacred and how holy the services were. And so one day we find them coming forth to make the sacrifices. Now, whenever there were sacrifices and it was acceptable to God, there would be a fire that would come down from God and strike the sacrifice. And how do you think the people, the children of Israel, reacted when they presented their sacrifice, the fire came down and accepted the sacrifice? What do you think they did as far as the way they reacted to this? Because to me, it's a very important part of the story. Absolutely. They were humbled because, after all, they were in the presence of God. How else did they react?
They were afraid.
They were afraid? Well, not in this particular situation. What else did they... How else did they react? Well, pardon?
Relieved?
Relieved? We'll take relieved a little bit. They also praised and sang and celebrated. So we find them full of thanksgiving, maybe relieved, don't know. But they had praise, they had songs, and it ended up they were humbled. Whenever anybody came into the presence of God, usually the first reaction was that humbleness. And they would fall to the ground. And so the children of Israel would fall to the ground because they realized that they had seen a small part of the glory of God when He came down and accepted that sacrifice. Now we find the two sons, again, the number 3 and number 4 most powerful people, children of Israel, and they get a little lax. Instead of doing the rite ceremony, they substitute some of the fragrances. They don't really go through the spiritual washing, and so they come in to present the sacrifices. And there is something that comes out of heaven, but what happens? Pardon?
They're consumed.
They're struck dead.
They brought strange fire into it as well.
They brought strange fire. That was part of the spices and the things that they were supposed to bring. They just picked up their own. They were supposed to bring a special kind of kindling wood. They brought in their own. The whole thing, and they were struck dead. Now, a fair question to ask is, what do we learn from this?
Obedience.
So this goes to, they were afraid or they were relieved. Okay, what else do we learn from this?
That God is specific.
God is exacting. Okay,
Cain,
great feeling.
Cain and Abel.
What about it?
Sacrifice. Wrong one. Bring your own stuff.
Wow. Okay. So let me get this right now. We got God who says, if you mess up, bam. Now, you see why we kind of... Do y'all, where you go to religion class, do y'all just kind of skip that story?
Well, it's the great religions of the world.
Oh. Okay, just checking. Because, see, it's almost fun just to skip the story and say, well, you know, I got to kind of scratch my head. I'm not real sure. Certainly doesn't make... What's the name of our ministry?
Knowing
God's ministries. If that was the only story we had, that certainly wouldn't be real appealing. Yes, I saw a hand.
It seems to me that when you do something that you know God isn't asking you to do, when He's asked you to do something else, there's something inside of you that is not committed. And it's just a reflection of your lack of commitment.
We're going to come to that. How many times have I taught you all not to come up with the conclusion before 11? Do you have this trouble over in the Dallas church? They want to come to the conclusion early. See? And just kind of messes it up. We're going to come to that. Okay, now.
You learn you don't drink and drive.
That's right. By the way, well, we'll come to that in a minute. All right. In the quarterly... And I don't like to take exception to the quarterly. I just point things out. First of all, I learned a long time ago what the lesson author writes in the quarterly and what gets printed are often two different things. So it's a little hard to sometimes say the lesson author said this because sometimes it's edited. In the quarterly, it talks about God's wrath. That's what we're going to talk about this morning. Then we're going to come back to the story of the two sons. We're going to do that at 11:10. Talks about God's wrath. And it says, as God poured His wrath, paraphrasing, out on the two boys, that God poured His wrath out on the cross. But instead of God's wrath killing us, it killed Jesus. I'm not comfortable with that. So, I would like to go to the Bible, which is always a good place to go to. And let's look at, first of all, what is God's wrath? Well, there's no better place to go than Romans, the first chapter. What version do you have? I don't want the clear word. Nothing wrong with the clear word. It's just I don't want it this time. Holman? Yeah, that'll work. Turn to Romans 1, hold 24, 26, 28. All right, now back up in verse 18, which we're going to just walk through very quickly. Paul's talking to the Romans, and he's talking about the God's wrath. And he's talking about that God's wrath is poured out on people who do bad things. He says, you know, if you're a fornicator, you're an idolater, you're a liar, you're a cheat, and everything, you're going to suffer God's wrath. Now, seems like right now we're really in sync with everything that's been said this morning. However, as Paul always likes to do, he presents a case, a theory, then he comes in and starts filling it in. So let's see what God's wrath is. All right, let's go with verse 24.
Therefore, God delivered them over in the cravings of their hearts to sexual impurity, so that their bodies were degraded among themselves. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served something created instead of the Creator who is blessed forever.
Okay, let's stop there. 24. Who else has 24? What other words does it have? He says, God what, delivered? Okay, what does versions does 24 say?
Gave them up.
God what did what?
Gave them up.
Gave them up. What other versions?
Gave them over.
Gave them over. All right, do you start getting the picture? Let's go to 26. Let's go to Holman first.
This is why God delivered them over to degrading passions, for even their females exchanged natural sexual intercourse for what is unnatural.
Okay, what does your verses say in 26?
Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lust.
All right, God gave over. Who else?
Gave them up to vile passions.
Gave them up? Gave them up. Watch, go to 28. Remember, this is God's wrath. Go to Holman first.
And because they did not think it worthwhile to have God in their knowledge, God delivered them over to a worthless mind to do what is morally
okay.
wrong.
So we have God delivered. What does your say?
Gave them over.
Gave them over? Gave them up. Gave them up. Okay.
Did not seem fit to acknowledge God.
Did not seem fit to acknowledge God. Okay. Now, these people were great sinners because they had a long list of sins that they committed. Read some of the sins, Roger, in any of the verses.
Unrighteous, evil, greed, and wickedness. They are filled with envy, murder, disputes, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, arrogant, proud, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, and unmerciful.
Wow! Covers it all! What do you think it means when Paul says, let's discuss the wrath of God? Because that's what Romans 1 is all about, especially starting with verse 18. He's very specific. The wrath of God. What do you think it means when he says, and God gave them up, or God delivered them? What do you think that means?
He allowed Satan to have his way.
Okay.
Experience the natural consequences of their actions.
Absolutely.
Free will. Removed his love and protection from them.
Okay. What did you say? Always get hairs. Have you noticed the back row always has the heresy here? Then the rest of us has got to work hard to keep bringing. Did what?
They gave them up to free will. They allowed them to make their own decisions.
Okay. Does God operate that way?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes. Tough love.
Tough love. Oh, we got tough love here, man. Yeah.
He allowed them to reject him.
Why?
That was their choice. They chose that way.
His character. He cannot do anything other than allow you to make your own decisions. Now, the interesting thing about God is He does absolutely everything in His power that He can to give you evidence, to give you proof, to call upon you, to do the best He can that will draw you to Him. But His whole principle is founded upon free will. And so a question happens is, what happens when you look at God, you feel the calling that He has, you see the evidence of what He's like, you see the evidence of consequences when you don't do what He wants, because if Blaine is exactly right, you suffer the natural consequences when you wander away. So what can God do with somebody who looks Him in the face squarely and says, I don't want to go your way? What can He do? So Paul comes along and says, let me help you with God's wrath. God doesn't sit there and get mad. God doesn't sit there and say, four sins, lots of problems. He sits there and He gives you evidence. He pulls, He demonstrates, He shows His love. He does everything that He possibly can. But somewhere along the way, when you say, I want to go down this path, and nothing's going to keep me from going down this path, then God says, I have no other choice but to allow you to go. And so, as Paul says in Romans 1, he gives us up. Most important question. What is his attitude when this happens? Mad? You know, I can remember somebody in the church when I was young, that people would blaspheme on TV or they would do certain things, and I remember the person saying, you know, that's okay. God's going to get them in the judgment. And so, see, it's kind of like the judgment's the great equalizer.
But, Ernie, is it wrong to be upset? What did God do with Jesus do with the money changers in the temple?
Oh, no, I don't think there's anything wrong with being upset. I think it's wrong when you look at God as the equalizer. See? Because it puts God in a horrendous light. Our ministry is saying, get to know God. If God is arbitrary, He's exacting, and you disobey, He's going to strike you dead. Man, there's some other motivations outside of just love to get to know Him. Remember, the disciples, as dumb and stupid as they were for 3 years, didn't even know Him. But it's quoted, Desire of Ages 4:78, it was not the fear of punishment, nor was the hope of heaven, that the disciples followed Jesus. They beheld His matchless love for them, and they followed Him. We don't worship God because we get a reward, or we don't get a reward. Because that's not a true relationship. I had a great saying again until Sue divulged where I got it on a signboard in Harlingen, Texas. Until then, I claimed authorship. Rules without relationship results in rebellion. So, if your motivation to worship God is you're relieved when He doesn't kill you, or you feel good, or you're afraid that He is going to kill you, or if I give 20% tithe, I'm going to heaven, they're both equally wrong. Because where's the relationship? So Paul comes along and says, let me help you with this God's wrath thing. It isn't that God gets mad. It isn't that you go so far He can't do anything and doesn't want to pull you back. It's just that He does everything in His power. But you, bent on following a life of sin, says, I don't care, and go down that path. And God sits there and He has tears running down His cheek. And He says, I've got to do it. I've got to let them go. But oh, how I hurt. Now, let's look at one of the things where this was true in the New Testament. Who are the Pharisees?
Religious.
The religious people. Who knew everything about religion. Who knew every law. Who invented laws. They were the height of religion, except for one thing. When God Himself walked among them, they didn't even recognize Him. And so, time after time, Christ appealed to the Pharisees. He drove the ones out of the temple. But as Rob pointed out last week, they all ran, but the little children never ran. Little children sit there and they come back, and there's little children all over Him. See, so we get that picture wrong. Because if Jesus was a madman, throwing things around, tossing people out, children run. By the way, this is a clue why the money changers ran to why the two boys were struck dead in Leviticus. There's a clue there. Now, did Jesus appeal to the Jewish nation, His children of Israel, while He was on earth? Told them everything He possibly could. And what did they do to him? Crucified him. And then came along one of the most pivotal things that could happen to any religious person when they decided to stone Stephen. And Stephen, as he was being stoned, there came a great light upon him, and instead of ducking, mad, crying out, "Why me?" he says, "I see on the right hand of God, who's there?" By the interesting deal on 1844, won't you just think about that one? I see up in heaven who's there, and he begins to pray and take them through the history of the Old Testament and prays for them. And what did that do for these religious leaders? Nothing. They got bigger stones and threw faster and harder. Now, a fair question is, I only ask fair questions, what could God do for this nation? What else could he do? He sent his son. And they said, "Crucify him, let his blood be upon us." So what happened in AD 70? Jerusalem was destroyed by the Roman army. Why? Because God was mad? Because God wanted them to suffer? No. He sadly said, "There's nothing else I can do. I'm going to give you up. Let you go your own way." And in AD 70, they were destroyed. Pardon? Nothing you can do. There's nothing God can do. Go back to the time... Rob, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I had a young lady come in. Often I don't get to see the results of when they work through their issue. This lady came back and said, I needed to tell you some things. And so she shared with me her experience and how she came to know the Father. And she said, "I thank God that I was a tare. And God let the wheat grow with the tares."
Absolutely.
Said he didn't jerk out the wheat.
Absolutely.
Destroyed the tares. And it just, boy, I got tears in my eyes thinking that. And she said, "I was a tare. And God didn't take that away from me. He did not stop. He kept pursuing me."
Yes. Absolutely.
That's incredible.
He'll run you down. But once you make that decision, you look at him and say, "I want a different way," sadly, he has nothing to do. Well, I always like it when the Old Testament backs me up. That makes me feel good. Psalms 81, verses 11 and 12. Whoever gets there first. Psalms 81, verses 11 and 12.
"My people did not listen to me."
All right, now listen to this. This is a call to the children of Israel by David. Oh, by the way, what kind of life did David live? Oh, never mind. By David, to repentance for the entire children of Israel. And in this particular passage, the whole chapter, but we're going to read 11 and 12. He starts out by saying, "My people would not listen to me.
Israel did not obey me, so I gave them over to their stubborn hearts to follow their own plans."
Okay, and if we wanted to read on, we can see what happens. Do you see? Remember, that common thread runs through the Bible. So here, he says, "Listen, my people wouldn't listen. I did everything I can. I just gave them up so that they could follow their own desires." Yes?
Can I read this version of the 13th?
Yes, sir.
Or the last half 11. It says, "Israel would have none of me."
That's right.
See?
Yeah.
It's their choice.
That's right. God's not sitting there saying, "Okay, you know, when we get to 42 sins and only 12 good ones. It's lopsided. I'm going to do something. He said, when you come to your final decision, I've got to honor it. Now, there's no greater Old Testament theology on this than the book of Hosea. Hosea was written before 722. The entire 12 tribes were about to be annihilated by the Assyrians and no longer exist. Can't get any worse than that. And so God sends three prophets. And one of them was Hosea. And Hosea starts out with a story about the man with his unfaithful wife, and even though she's a harlot and does all of this, he goes all over, gets her, tries to win her back. Obviously, that's God saying, hey, let's look at this relationship. And finally, he gets down to the 11th chapter, one of the most beautiful, one of the most saddest chapters in the Bible, when he lays it all on the table. And he says to the children of Israel, when you were a baby, I held you in my arms. It was I, when you were hungry, fed you. It was I who took you by the hand and taught you to walk. It was I who drew you to me with cords of loving kindness. But you chose to be with your idols. Then the saddest words that he says, I can do nothing. I have to let you go. And they did. And they were destroyed as a nation. Let's go back to the two boys. Did they understand what this ceremony was all about? Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Did they understand who God was? Oh, they had been privileged like no other people had been privileged. They were among the 70 that went up into the mountains. They were among the people that saw a partial look at the glory, the character of God. They were the third and fourth highest people of responsibility in the 2 or 3 millions that were the children of Israel. Yes.
They were the sons of Aaron. And it demonstrates how quickly God's word is rejected by our families, our children. It's a very, very poignant point. Mm-hmm. Quickly. The scene changes.
Yes. So what happened to these two boys? I mean, where did they start going wrong? Well, one of them was Aaron. Very laxed with them. No discipline. But the big problem was, remember when the fire came out and consumed the sacrifice? This was part of the veiled glory of God. And these two boys started shortcutting. Well, why do we need to get all this specific wood? Why do we need to get all of these specific flavors? Why can't we just do what's easy? And then here's the big one. They'd been drinking. Their mind was clouded. You see, with great revelation, and boy, sometimes this is painful for you that know me. Sometimes with great revelation comes great responsibility. And these two boys had wandered, shortchanged, service meant nothing to them. They were interested in only one thing, as most all sinners are interested in. I want to do it my way. That is the essence of sin. Not God's way, but my way. And so when these two boys walked in and presented with defiled hearts, with doing it their way, with no concern of what God was like, and when that partial revealed glory of God came down, what happens to the ultimate sinful heart in the presence of God?
It's destroyed. Right?
Destroyed. What do you think is going to end, how life is going to end at the end of time? God comes. There's only two classes of people. What's one class going to say? Lo, this is our God. What's the other class going to say? Hide, hide, hide. Do you get the picture? It's the same God. Miss Conclusion over there at 10:45. It's what's in here that makes all the difference in the world. It's not God. God is going to come in His glory. That's His promise. And you're going to be so set in your ways, one way or the other, that nothing is going to change. And when you come, if you have that relationship with God, you're going to say, what took you so long? When you don't have that relationship, it's not God who's different, it's you. And you're going to say, let me out of here. And you find places to hide. You pray that the rocks, the mountains, they fall upon you. And then we're going to have a great panoramic view. And every person is going to bow and say, must get this picture. They're going to bow and say, God, You were fair. You are justified. You are correct. And those two boys of Aaron's are going to bow down and say, yes, You gave me every chance. I just didn't want to take it. And then God steps back and He waits. He waits for any of the wicked to say, by the way, I now have changed my thinking and I have seen Your goodness and I would like to be in heaven for eternity.
Be too late then.
Pardon?
Be too late then.
It's never too late for God. Never too late for God. The problem is, you're so settled in what your choice is, that doesn't even move you. And what's the next statement then that comes out of your mouth? Let's go kill them people. By the way, that's the final judgment for the universe. Because you see, the universe never has again to wonder, what if? What if God had done something just a little different? What if He'd have waited a little longer? Whatever. The final deal is, let's go kill Him. And then God reveals Himself in all of His glory. And what happens to a sinner who cuts himself away from the lifeline, which is God? He dies. Revelation, one of the texts I love, says that in heaven, God Himself and that himself is very, very prominent, will come around and wipe the tears from your eyes. You know why? He's wiping his own. You don't understand how precious you are to him. You don't understand that though we make mistakes, though we make final eternal decisions, he never changes. He loves us. He's heartbroken. He cares. It's just that he has to say, you're so enjoined to the path that you want that I have to let you go. But my goodness, how painful. But I have to. That's God's wrath. Father in heaven, some stories are hard, but we cling to the text that you're the same yesterday, you're the same today, and you're the same tomorrow. As we look through that thread through the 66 books, over and over, it becomes very plain. Your desire is to love us, for us to respond and spend eternity with you. You said that in so many ways. But you come along and say, every once in a while, my children, they just want to go a different path. I don't want it. I do everything to prevent it. But in the end, I honor that decision. And when you give them up, oh, what pain you have. What sadness you have. And we can see the tears as they run down your cheek when you say, there's nothing left to do. This is what draws us to you, is your love and care. Thank you for who you are. In Jesus' name, amen.